Who remembers something from yesterday? Ah, driving. That's all you remember. Red sands. Who remembers from yesterday's class?
Big fight.
Huh?
Big fight.
Between whom?
Lima.
And?
Yeah.
And who won? Yes. Devotee. That is true, that Krishna empowers. Because without Srimad Urdhvatam Evava, that without being something that's opulent in this world, is opulent and powerful because of Krishna's, some fragment of Krishna's potency, due to the person's piety or his sincerity or his devotion, some of Krishna's potency is within him. And Krishna is the all-potent. So, two things were done with one act. The kings were freed, and who were imprisoned by Jarasandha. Jarasandha was killed, and therefore there was no one who was objecting to Yudhisthira as being the emperor. And who remembers the name of Jarasandha's son who was installed as the king? Almost. Half right. I'll give you a hint.
Dev
was there, and one of Arjuna's brothers had the same name.
Sardev.
So, Sukadev Goswami is continuing narrating this to Maharaj Prakriti. Having thus heard of the killing of Jarasandha and also of the Almighty Krishna's wonderful power, King Yudhisthira addressed the Lord as follows with great pleasure. Sri Yudhisthira said, all the exalted spiritual masters of the three worlds, together with the inhabitants and rulers of the various planets, carry on their heads your command, which is rarely obtained. So Krishna heard these words from Yudhisthira. What words? All the spiritual masters of the three worlds, all the inhabitants and rulers of the various planets, carry on their head Krishna's commands, which is rarely obtained. Very difficult to get an order from Krishna, a direct instruction from Krishna. Here's the purport. Srila Prabhupada renders Maharaj Yudhisthira's statement as follows. My dear Krishna, O eternal form of bliss and
knowledge,
all the exalted directors of the affairs of this material world, including Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and King Indra, are always anxious to receive and carry out orders from you. And whenever they are fortunate enough to receive such orders, they immediately take them and keep them in their hearts. Text 3. That you, the lotus-eyed Supreme Lord, after Jarasandha was killed, chapter 73, and in this chapter, Krishna hears the words of the kings, and then he returns back to Hastinapur. And the next chapter, Yudhisthira speaks to Krishna. So we've already heard some of the next chapter. But in this chapter, Jarasandha has just been killed, and all those kings, how many were there? More than 1,000, I think. But maybe we're here. Oh, yes. 20,800. Jarasandha had defeated 20,800 kings in combat and thrown them into prison. As these kings emerged from the Giridroni fortress, Droni means mountain. Giridroni means the mountain fortress. They appeared dirty and shabbily dressed because they were in prison. They were emaciated by hunger. They were weak from hunger, and their faces were dried up, and they were greatly weakened by their long imprisonment. The kings then looked at the Lord who was directly before them. His complexion was dark blue, like the color of a
rainbow.
And he wore a yellow silk garment. He was distinguished by the Srivats mark on his chest, and he had four mighty arms. The color of his eyes were pinkish, which resembled the whorl of a lotus. His lovely, cheerful face, his gleaming makar earrings, and the lotus club conch shell and disc in his hands. A helmet, a jeweled necklace, a golden belt, and golden bracelets and armlets decorated his form. And on his neck he wore the brilliant precious Kastuba gem and a garland of forest flowers. The kings seemed to drink his beauty with their eyes, lick him with their tongues, and relish his fragrance with their nostrils, and embrace him with their arms. Their past sins were now eradicated, completely removed. And the kings all bowed down to Lord Hari and placed their heads at his feet. How many kings?
800.
The ecstasy of looking at Lord Krishna, having dispelled the weariness, the tiredness of their imprisonment, the kings stood with joint palms, and they offered words of praise to that supreme master of the senses, to Rishikesh. The kings offered praise to him. So from text 8, to text 16, they will offer their prayers. And they were kings, and they were in prison, and they were rescued by Krishna. Now, what are they going to say? They had called to Krishna. They had surrendered to Krishna. He had come and rescued them. So let's hear what they say in 9 verses. There's not very many purports. What I'm going to do, first I'm going to read it. Now, just read all the verses. Please listen carefully, and as soon as I finish, I'll ask you what struck you from their words. They were kings, they had been in prison, and now they were seeing Krishna directly in front of them. Obeisances to you, O Lord of the ruling demigods, O destroyer of your surrendered devotees' distress. Since we have surrendered to you, O inexhaustible Krishna, please save us from this terrible material life which has made us so miserable and despondent. O Master Madhusudan, we do not blame this king of Magadha, Jarasandha, since it is actually by your mercy that kings fall from their royal position, O Almighty Lord. Infatuated and enamored with his own opulence and ruling power, a king loses his self-restraint and cannot obtain his own true welfare. Thus bewildered by her illusory energy, he imagines this temporary asset that he's a king to be permanent. Just as men of childish intelligence consider a mirage in the desert to be a pond of water, so those who are irrational look upon the illusory transformations of Maya as having substance, as being real. Previously, we were blinded by the intoxication of our riches, and we wanted to conquer this earth. And thus we fought one another to achieve victory. We mercilessly harassed our own subjects. We arrogantly disregarded you, O Lord, who stood before us as death. But now, O Krishna, that powerful form of yours called time, moving mysteriously and irresistibly, has deprived us of all of our opulences. Now that you have mercifully destroyed our pride, we beg you, simply, may we remember your lotus feet. Never again will we hanker for a mirage-like kingdom, a kingdom that must be slavishly served by this mortal body, which is simply a source of disease and a source of suffering, and which is declining at every moment. Nor, O Almighty Lord, will we hanker to enjoy the heavenly fruits of pious work in the next life, since the promise of such rewards is simply an empty enticement for the ears. Please tell us how we may constantly remember your lotus feet, though we continue in the cycle of birth and death in this world. Again and again we offer our obeisances unto Lord Krishna, Hari, the son of Vasudeva. That supreme soul, Govinda, vanquishes the suffering of all who surrender to him. What do you think?
Pass the proof.
What do you remember? What struck you?
Well, first it strikes me how Krishna in the beginning didn't know where to go, if to save the kings or for the Yudhishthira. And like what his plan was, maybe to keep them a few more months there to get the humility that they needed. So they see they're not actually the body and they're not really kings, and whoever really gives them what they are is Krishna.
Oh.
And Krishna. Yeah. And they saw it after the hotel.
It's interesting how they said this suffering has not been caused by Jarasandha.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who caused it?
Huh?
What did he say directly? What did they say? Oh, Master Madhusudan, we do not blame this king of Magda, since it is actually by your mercy that kings fall from their royal position, Almighty Lord.
Mm.
It's mercy when one can see Krishna's kindness in it. And what was the kindness that they saw? That they were intoxicated by the illusion of feeling themselves king, and they gave so many people trouble, their subjects, they harassed each other. And they were chasing something, some victory. What did they compare their victory and their goal to? The mirage of water in the desert. It's always out of your reach. Always out of your reach.
It's amazing that they were kings and they were able to see a kingdom as a source of entanglement.
Well, it's nothing like suffering to make you see, see in those ways.
Yeah.
When they were kings, they weren't seeing that way, but when they were imprisoned, because what they were trying to do to others, someone had done to them.
Right.
Just as men of childless intelligence consider a mirage in the desert to be a pond of water, so those who are, who are irrational, what does irrational mean?
Without good intelligence.
Illogical, or don't see things accurately. So those who are irrational look upon the illusory transformation of Maya as substantial. What does that mean? The illusory transformation. Vikarika mayam. He's looking at this material world that's always shifting and changing, but we see it as having substance and being worthwhile. And we try to achieve something of substance in the land of smoke and shadows. And what is the result? We will get knocked down from the thrones of our kingdom. It has to happen by Krishna's mercy. Because there's nothing in this world is eternal. Everything is temporary. And if we could find a situation here and be happy, we would keep ourselves from Krishna. Also he says, but now, O Krishna, they say, that powerful form of yours called time, moving mysteriously and irresistibly, has deprived us of our opulences.
The kings are looking at the form of Vishnu because the description of Vishnu is mentioned. So they have realized that Krishna is Vishnu.
They're looking at the form of Krishna, who has four arms at this point. Sometimes Krishna had four arms and sometimes he had two arms. And depending on how many arms he wanted to have.
Yeah. Was I Kama Mishra about this? The deity that you were meditating on heavenly enjoyment?
No, before they were meditating on heavenly enjoyment. Now they were just meditating on Krishna due to their distress. Before they were in prison and meditating on Krishna due to their distress. They wanted freedom from distress. But they didn't want heavenly planets. When they were wanted heavenly enjoyments, they weren't interested in Krishna.
So they must have been quite advanced devotees to meditate so intensely on Krishna while being in prison, Vajrasana.
They surrendered to him. So when someone surrendered, whatever reason, they're considered devotees. And devotee means advanced devotee. And it's also interesting because why couldn't they really be devotees while they were kings? Not that a king can't be a devotee, because we contrast this with Maharaj Yudhisthira. Because Maharaj Yudhisthira, just we were hearing yesterday, or the day before, was it? He was saying why he wanted to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice, and it was to glorify Krishna only. So it wasn't the fact that he was a king, that they were kings, that was getting in the way. It was their desires, something more subtle and internal, that was the problem. So why couldn't they actually be devotees while they were kings? And there's one verse that describes that. And then what Krishna did to help them. Although it didn't seem like he was helping them at that time. Previously, blinded by the intoxication of riches, we wanted to conquer this earth. And thus we fought one another to achieve victory, mercilessly harassing our own subjects. We arrogantly disregarded you, O Lord, who stood before us as death. But now, O Krishna, that powerful form of yours called time, moving mysteriously and irresistibly, has deprived us of our opulences. Now that you have mercilessly destroyed our pride, we beg simply to remember your lotus feet. So many points in that. Yeah. So the problem was pride. They were powerful and they were proud. Yudhisthira was powerful. He was he was called in the beginning of the chapter, "Oh, terrible conqueror of your enemies," or something like that. He was so powerful. Krishna empowered him to be like that.
That there was no pride.
So what did they want? What was their desire? After everything was taken away, after they had been in prison for so long, they were looking at beautiful Krishna standing before them with his forearms, and their only desire and their prayer from him was to constantly and simply remember his lotus feet. That means remember him. They didn't want, never again will we hanker for a mirage-like kingdom. A kingdom must be that must be slavishly served by this mortal body. When we think of being a king, the idea of king or boss is like master. But the master ends up being the greatest servant. He has no freedom at all. He has so many masters. So never again, we lost everything. We don't want any, we don't want this back. We just have to, because it's just we're forced to be servants. We have to, the kingdom must be slavishly served by this mortal body, which is simply a source of disease and suffering, and which is declining at every moment, at every moment. Nor, O mighty Lord, we don't want this kingdom, will we hanker to enjoy the heavenly fruits of pious work in the next life, because kings would perform sacrifice to accumulate piety, so in their next life they would have heavenly enjoyment instead of earthly enjoyment. But we don't want that anymore, since the promise of such rewards is simply an empty enticement for the ears. There's no pleasure in it. Again, what do they want? Please tell us how we may constantly remember your lotus feet, though we continue in the cycle of birth and death in this world. So they're not even asking for liberation. They're just asking to remember Krishna's lotus feet. How could that be? Because being in the material world means suffering, and no one likes to suffer. So why aren't they asking for freedom from material life? Free from material life, plus more, because by remembrance of Krishna, they're with Krishna, and there's the sweetness, transcendental sweetness that comes from being with Krishna.
By being in distress in material life, that is, so we can remember Krishna more than being in a comfortable position.
But what they're asking for is not distress, but they're asking just to remember Krishna, whatever happens to us. Even if we have to continue, they don't feel themselves qualified in the cycle of birth and death in this world. They don't care about that. They don't care. They just want to remember, be fixed as Krishna's servant. Doesn't seem like this specifically the reason why they're asking, don't want to get out of the material world and so that they'll be in distress and remember Krishna, because the material world is a combination of even this enjoyment in hell. So it's always a combination. If it was always suffering, then you'd get used to the suffering and the suffering wouldn't be so bad. But it's sometimes suffering, sometimes happiness, sometimes suffering, sometimes happiness.
Yeah, but it is on a material platform.
Yeah.
So it's always material.
Because the material platform disappears automatically if we're on the spiritual platform.
just constantly, I'll read the little purport here. One can constantly remember the Lord only by His mercy. Such remembrance is the easy method to obtain the supreme liberation, as explained in the Bhagavad Gita. Ananya chaita satatam yomam smarati nityasam tasyaham sulabha parta nityayuktasya yoga nityayuktasya yoga. That one who is always remembering Krishna, yomam remembering me, smarati nityasa always remembering me, ananya chaita satatam without thinking of anything else, tasyaham for him sulabha, I'm easy to obtain. Why? Nitya yuktasya yoga. He's always connected to me in yoga by the process of remembering Krishna, because he's always with Krishna, because Krishna and Krishna are the same. In the translation, for one who remembers me without deviation, I'm easy to obtain. Sulabha is easy to obtain, O son of Prita, because of his constant engagement in devotional service. The words api samsaratam iha indicates that the kings were approaching Lord Krishna not merely for liberation, but rather for the boon of always being able to remember his lotus feet. Such constant remembrance is a symptom of love, and love of Godhead is the actual goal of life. And they conclude by saying, again and again, we offer our obeisances unto Lord Krishna, Hari, the son of Vasudev. That supreme soul, Govinda, vanquishes the suffering of all those who surrender to him. So naturally, through surrender, what does surrender mean? Krishna in the center, and to be Gotripte Varanandata, to be fully dependent upon him, and look at Krishna as your maintainer. Some of the acharyas say looking at Krishna as the maintainer is the essence or the angi of the different limbs or parts of surrender. Some say looking at Krishna as the protector. The people who say Gotripte Varanam, looking at Krishna as the maintainer, means they say that if Krishna, if you place yourself fully under Krishna, and he look to him to maintain you, even then he's also, then it's also looking to him for protection. I see that protection is part of maintenance.
Six
symptoms of surrender as explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita. I mean, verse 2, I mentioned maintaining protector. Do you recall? Some Padma Purana, I think. Accept everything favorable for your service. Reject everything unfavorable. Rakshishya titti visvasa, with great faith, place yourself under Krishna's protection. Gotripte varanam tata, accept that he's him as your maintainer. Atma vichepta, giving yourself full and truly, kopanye, humility, sadvidam sharanagati. These are the six divisions of surrender. So what is Krishna going to reply to these kings? What do you think? What will he say? I don't want anything. Just, what have they asked for, first of all?
To remember him.
Yeah, how can we remember you? Will he answer their question directly? Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. from now on, my dear kings, okay, your life is divided into two parts. What happened already, and from now on. From now on, my dear king, you will have firm devotion to me, the Supreme Self and the Lord of all that be. I assure you, this will come to pass, just as you desire. That's what they're asking for. Fortunately, you have come to the proper conclusion, my dear kings. And what you have spoken is true. I can see that human beings' lack of self-restraint, which arises from their intoxication with opulence and power, simply leads to madness. Mm-hmm. Madness in what sense? Irrational conclusions, irrational activities, just trying to be happy, find happiness where there is no happiness. Men thinking they're going to live forever, because that's how we live our life, thinking that tomorrow will be like today and the next day will be like the day before, but it's not how it works. Tomorrow will be like today sometimes, and then one day we find out that we have a heart problem and then, or have a stroke or something, and then everything shifts, and someday it's over. And we don't know when, of course. So that's madness, because we never expect anything like this to happen. To us, we see it happening to someone else, and we think, glad that wasn't me. Everyone thinks like that inside. That was close. That's madness, because of our turn. Because along with our birth, our Yamaraj has entered into the database. One of the fields is time of death, time of birth, time of death, all the activities. So the enter key is pressed already. It's already in the program. It's already in the database. And his system never crashes. Hai, Nahusha, Vena, Ravana, Naraka. Were these, were they, is this a list of good guys or bad guys? And many other rulers of demigods, men and demons. Hai, I think, and Nahusha was, he was assistant to Indra. They all fell from their elevated positions because of intoxication with their material opulence. Understanding that this material body and everything connected with it has a beginning and an end, you should worship me by Vedic sacrifices and with clear intelligence protect your subjects in accordance with the principles of religion. So Krishna is telling them to do this. So by surrendering and following his order, they're going to naturally remember him. Because why are they doing it? Before they were doing it, they were doing their duties and activities. Why? To gain material opulence. Krishna didn't have anything to do with it. But now, they're dutifully, as their service, going to perform these activities, these pious activities, which are basically the duties of a king. And therefore, because Krishna's ordering them to do it, they're going to naturally remember him. Why am I doing this? Because Krishna wants me to do it. So naturally, they'll remember him. As you live your lives, begetting generations of progeny and encountering happiness and distress, birth and death, always keep your mind fixed on me. Be detached from the body and everything connected to it. Remaining self-satisfied, steadfastly keeping your vows while concentrating your minds fully on me. In this way, you will ultimately attain me, the Supreme Absolute Truth. That was his instructions. What do you remember from those instructions?
He's telling them to keep their dharma as kings, and to get sacrifices.
But in the right mentality, there were a lot of instructions about the mentality to do this, like that last verse. Be detached from the body and everything connected to it, remaining self-satisfied. Keep your vows steadily while concentrating your minds fully on me. I mean, what's the use of being a king if you're going to be detached from your body and you can't have a good time? Be detached from everything connected to it. You're the king and you have a kingdom. Remain self-satisfied. Don't look externally for your satisfaction. And keep, while you're doing all these things, keep your vows while concentrating your mind fully on me. And then you will attain me, the Supreme Absolute Truth. So he's dealing with the consciousness. You've come to the right conclusions about material life, about your king, but don't give up being a king. Give up your desire to enjoy kingly life.
Become
a devotee king, yeah. Understand that you've come to the right conclusions, but yet now do your duty with the right consciousness. Protect your subjects with clear intelligence. Worship me by Vedic sacrifices. Live your life. Beget generations. The king must have their families and have new kings coming. Counteract and begetting, live your life. Encountering happiness and distress. It's going to happen. Birth and death. But while this is happening, keep your mind always fixed on me. Always keep your mind fixed on me. Because how can we do that? One way is that there's such a force in a person to beget generations of progeny. And happiness will come, it must come. Distress must come. Birth must come. Death must come. So who is enforcing these things? Whoever enforces these laws must be incredibly powerful, and no one can escape these laws. So actually speaking, we can surmise that he's all powerful. So therefore, just by watching the forces of nature interact with our own lives, watching our bodies get older, watching happiness come to us and distress come to us, understand that just as they saw that their imprisonment and their being defeated wasn't being done by Jarasandha, but it was being done by Krishna, mysteriously in the form of time. So they were seeing Krishna's hand in everything, because their request was, how can we remember you? He's saying surrender and become actual devotees and adopt this vision, this consciousness, this Krishna consciousness, and you'll see me in life. He's not telling them, go to the forest, renounce everything, go to the forest. It's a little Bhagavad Gita here. It is a Bhagavad Gita because the Bhagavad Krishna is singing it.
Why in the Bhagavad Gita? It tells Arjuna leave all kinds of earthly dharma and surrender unto me, and to them it says, kind of speak to your earthly dharma.
But what was the earthly dharma that Krishna told Arjuna to give up? Was it fighting?
No.
He was talking about consciousness. He didn't tell him to give up his he told him, give up the motivation, practically speaking, and surrender unto me. Because there were so many different levels of Dharma, but the highest form of religiosity is surrender to Krishna. So don't be motivated by following this Dharma and that Dharma, but be motivated, you'll do your duty, but do it for me, for my pleasure. That's all at the moment. Because Krishna wanted Arjuna to fight. It was Krishna's desire that is the essential principle. And how someone deals with Krishna's desire could be on many different levels. Yeah. So Krishna told Arjuna to do it in a pure devotional level with surrender. Basically what they're telling
you. He directly said the same instruction, always think of me in the form of Krishna at the same time, okay, prescribed duty.
But at the end, the question was at the end when he said, give up all forms of religion and get to the essence. The essence is basically this, is do what I want, surrender unto me. And he was, the fact that he was a Kshatriya is secondary to the fact that Krishna wanted him to fight. Keep your mind, manmana bhava madbhad, manmana, keep your mind on me. That was what Krishna basically said. Bhava madbhad, go and be my devotee. That's what he's telling. Madhiji, worship me. Of the Maskru, and offer your obeisances to me. Is that right? And then, after telling, they expressed their desires, then he responded to them and instructed them as they wanted. But he didn't let them escape from being kings. He got them out of their prison. And this is what he did. Having thus instructed the kings, Lord Krishna, the supreme master of all the worlds, engaged male and female servants in bathing and grooming them. O descendant of Bharata, the Lord then had King Sahadev honor them with offerings of clothing, jewelry, garlands, sandalwood paste, all suitable for royalty. After they had been properly bathed and adorned, Lord Krishna saw to it that they dined on excellent food. He also presented them with various items befitting the pleasure of kings, such as betel nuts. And honored by Lord Mukunda and freed from tribulations, the kings shone splendidly, gave them honor. Because, why did he give them this kind of honor? Because they had to act like kings. You need a particular mentality to act like a king. And free from all tribulations and distress, the kings shone splendidly, their earrings gleaming, just as the moon and other celestial bodies shine brilliantly in the sky at the end of the rainy season. Then the Lord arranged for the kings to be seated on chariots drawn by fine horses and adorned with jewels and gold. And pleasing them with gracious words, he sent them off to their own kingdoms. So Krishna didn't take over the kingdom of Jarasandha. He didn't take all the wealth, he distributed it. Thus liberated from all difficulties by Krishna, the greatest of personalities. So how do you think they felt? They felt like kings, but they felt fully obliged to Krishna. And Krishna made it easier for them to remember him by giving them, taking care of them so wonderfully and so respectfully. You think he does that to all the devotees? Teaches them just give he gave them just what they needed. Do you think he gives all the devotees? He gives all the devotees what they need, except for me. Never gives me what I want. Thus liberated from all difficulties by Krishna, the greatest of personalities, the kings, departed. And as they went, they thought only of him. Because not only did he treat him in this wonderful way, he was so beautiful to behold too. They thought only of him, the Lord of the universe, and of his wonderful deeds. So they thought of him, his position, and the wonderful activities that he performed. The kings told their ministers and other associates what the personality of Godhead had done. So they engaged in preaching too. And then they diligently carried out the orders he had imparted to them. Having arranged for Bhimasena to kill Jarasandha, Lord Krishna accepted worship from King Sahadeva, and then he departed with the two sons of Pritha. There's only a few more verses. When they arrived, they departed and got back to Hastinapur, to Indraprastha. The victorious heroes blew their conch shells from outside the city, bringing joy to their well-wishing friends and sorrow to their enemies. The residents of Indraprastha were very pleased to hear that sound, for they understood that now the king of Magadha had been put to rest. King Yudhisthira felt that his desires were now fulfilled. Bhim, Arjuna, and Jarasandha offered their respects to the king and informed him fully about what they had done. And upon hearing their account of the great favor Lord Krishna had mercifully shown him, King Dhammaraj Yudhisthira shed tears of ecstasy. He felt such love that he could not say anything, because there was an obstacle to him performing, because he had asked Krishna, please, by your grace, can we perform this? And now Krishna had gotten rid of this main obstacle, Jarasandha. Okay, on Monday, Krishna willing, we shall continue and have Sisupal. How he gets his mercy and the Rajasriya sacrifice is performed. It's a nice little chapter, isn't it? The kings. Any questions or comments? You must be tired. 2 days of driving. Did you rest today? Where's one of the boys? Yeah. You're okay? Anxiety?
Yeah.
Yeah.